It's Sunday morning. Time for the great outdoors with Charlie Potter. Brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter here on WGN Radio, your host. Thanks for joining me. This morning's show is going to be about a possible, absolutely incredible transformation in how cattle are grazed and therefore what that means for wildlife habitat. And also, I promised you at the end of last week's show, I would talk about bears in Yellowstone. But in the meantime, I'm going to start off. I don't claim to be a technological whiz, so maybe someone can inform me if this is possible. Starlink, the incredible invention of Elon Musk, which has transformed so many things that we do. One of them is having cell reception no matter basically where you are in the world. But it may not work when you're buried in smoke. So I'm actually doing this show this morning from a very, very smoky part of the American West. And my Starlink is not working. So I've had to go back to the old-fashioned way of getting to a place where you actually have cell reception, which in parts of the American West is not something that exists in a lot of places. So the question is, can so much smoke cause the satellites not to work? And if that's the case, then the thing I'm going to talk about next, while it sounds like a great idea, might have problems. But I guess the first question is that even possible, that heavy, heavy smoke causes Starlink not to work? So let's go to what the world might look like without fences. Think about this. It's possible. It's coming. In fact, in some places and test plots, it's already here. And given the pace at which technology changes, just think about this for a moment. This could be the person who made the barbed wire fence or owns the barbed wire fence contract might go the way of the buggy whip. So, virtual fencing controlled by GPS with cattle wearing electric collars now, but ultimately just a simple ear tag. I was in a series of meetings this week in which this was discussed from the point of view of conservation. And this could be one of the most incredible conservation breakthroughs we've ever had. So just think about, there have to be millions of miles of fences in America for cattle and also for horses. But right now we're just going to talk about cattle. And what if they, by and large, came out because they weren't needed? Because cattle had a collar around their neck, or if they didn't have a collar, it's going to come within the next few years, they have an ear tags. So let me explain how this works. Right now, you can put a collar on a cow, and you don't need fencing of any kind. This is not even like invisible fence for dogs. There aren't any flags. There's nothing. You build on a GPS system, you build an electric current, which then is radioed back to the cow. Again, this is tech that's science, space age. You know, we used to watch Star Trek as kids and think that's never going to happen. Well, this has happened. By the way, a lot of what Star Trek predicted has happened as well. So a cow right now has a collar on it, and it's happily grazing, and it gets close to an invisible fence, which is controlled by your computer back at the ranch or at the farm, and you can move that fence. So the cow gets close to it, and it will beep, and the cow knows to stop. And then if the cow turns to the, let's say the cow is coming at this imaginary fence at an angle, it'll beep on its right side, in its right ear, which tells it to turn left and move away from the fence. There's no actual electric shock. It's all done through noise. Or if it's approaching the fence from an angle on the left, it beeps on the left side, and it directs the cow to go through to the right. Or the beeping is turned off entirely, and the cow is free to move. And then a new location for fencing is taking place. The object here is to, well, number one, one of the biggest expenses anyone on a farm or ranch has who has cattle is fencing. It's now costing $500 a mile or more. Actually, excuse me, I'm way off on that. It's costing over $1,000 a mile now to fence. And that's just the low cost, not the high cost. So think about something else. Think about all the fencing along interstates and all the roads that we've maintained to have fences put up on to stop cattle from crossing roads. This could become obsolete. And while the prices now appear to be in the $90 to $100 a head for a collar, which lasts about 3 years, that price is going to come down just like the price of computers came down. We might not need any fences. So just drive along the interstate in Illinois. We don't have many cattle in Illinois anymore, but we sure have a lot of fences, thousands of miles of fences. For what purpose? It was to keep animals off the road. Well, in the West, where you've got millions, literally, of cows grazing, a lot of it on public land, rest of it on private land, and fences crisscrossing the landscape, those fences could go away. All because we will have ear tags and collars on cattle. Moreover, we won't lose cattle. Much of what happens in the American West is cattle on the open range get lost. Well, if it's got a tag in its ear, which is where this is going to go pretty quickly, that tag's not coming out. The cows aren't getting lost. You're going to sit in the comfort of your office, living room, truck, wherever you may be, and you're going to know where every single cow on your property is because they're all going to be coded and they're going to be on your computer, and you can move that cow around just like you would simply steer. Imagine if you were literally steering an animal. That's what you're doing. You're just moving the cow around. But the ability is also to pack cattle into very small areas to effectively graze. So think of intensive grazing. What does all this mean for wildlife? It means that we won't have any fences. One of the biggest issues they think about was happening with sage grouse is that sage grouse fly into fences and kill themselves. I can't tell you how many times I have seen pheasants fly into fences and hang themselves. You won't have this occurring. And this miles and miles and miles of fence line with a little bit of brush underneath it, which is exactly where a fox runs its lines, or a coyote, they just follow the fence because that's the only place left for a bird to nest or a rabbit to live. If you get rid of the fences, you aren't going to have these straight corridors, which are nothing more than a buffet table for animals that eat birds. So it's rather incredible to think that this is coming in a big way. Right now, it's in test plots across America. Several startup companies are doing this. But from a wildlife management point of view, this will create incredible habitat for birds and get rid of these predator sinks, which are these miles of fence lines and all the animals, coyotes, raccoons, fox, they just follow the fence lines because that's what they know where the birds are nesting. Now you won't have those. So it's coming. It's exciting. But in the meantime, think about just the cost savings of not and the visualization of not having fences littering America as we have since settlement times, because it was the only way to confine animals. We might, in fact, once again have the wide open spaces, and we won't have antelope running into fences, and we won't have deer in fences. It's just unbelievable. And the costs, I'll predict, here we are in 2026, give us 5 years, and the costs won't be $90 a head. They'll be down maybe in the 20s or 30s, just the way it's happened with computers and cell phones. So that's my news on electric fences, or actually not electric fences. It's the move on fences, digital fences, that virtual fencing that actually moves. When I come back from the break, we're going back to Yellowstone Park, where I recently was, and talk about bears and a few other things. Thanks so much for being with me. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN. And first, a message from our longtime sponsors, the Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland Chevrolet dealers.
Hiking, camping, and hunting, it's all an adventure in the great outdoors, but nature can be tough. You need to be ready for anything and everything. Chevy Silverado is built to handle the toughest conditions and get you everywhere you want to go, worry-free. Silverado's designed to handle the big jobs. It's built for the great outdoors. With over 13,000 pounds of towing capacity and trailering sway control, Silverado can haul the biggest loads on the roughest roads and keep you cool as a Sunday drive. With 8 available cameras and up to 14 different views, it can spot trouble before it gets to you. That's peace of mind. And when you're ready for the backcountry, Chevy Silverado 1500 ZR2 owns the off-road. You name it, we run over it. No wonder it's Motor Trend's 2023 four-wheeler pickup truck of the year. So see your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealer or go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and check out a Chevy Silverado. It's freedom to explore the great outdoors.
It's Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Great Outdoors Show, Charlie Potter, and I'm going to take you from a place we were talking about virtual fencing. Well, there is no fencing in Yellowstone. 2.5 million acres and not a fence on it. And let me tell you what that looks like. It's beautiful. You look across these vast landscapes and there's no fencing because we're not trying to herd animals. Now, the perimeter of Yellowstone, a lot of that's fenced, but the interior, none. So the program I just was talking about before the break about virtual fencing, which I think is going to take over America in our lifetimes, and I don't mean 10 years from now, I mean like soon, you get a look at that when you're at Yellowstone National Park, and it's incredible. So 30-odd years ago, I was at Yellowstone National Park. I was fishing. A couple things you never do. One, you don't fish alone in Yellowstone National Park because of the bears and the buffalo and all the things that can happen. So rule number one is don't fish alone, particularly if you're in a remote area. Well, I broke that rule some 30 years ago, and I fished alone, and it was getting towards dark, and the fishing had been fabulous, and I was making my way across a trail to the major trail that would lead me to the parking lot some 6 miles away. And I had about an hour and a half of daylight. And out stepped from the bush, about 80 yards from me, a great big grizzly bear, right where I was headed. And behind that grizzly bear, here came two cubs, not one, but two, directly behind the grizzly bear. And they too were going exactly where I was headed. And beyond that, the grizzly bear at that point in time decided that it would just lay down with its cubs on the trail directly in front of me that I had to cross. So it didn't keep moving. It laid down. And then I froze like a fence post. I'm not, needless to say, the adrenaline goes from I'm having a nice walk, I've had a great day of fishing, to I'm in real trouble. And the grizzly bear stands up on its hind legs and looks towards me. Now, the wind was going from the bear to me, thank goodness. A grizzly bear will cover 80 yards faster than almost you can blink. It'll cover it in seconds. You don't have a chance. It stands up on its height, and it's, I don't know, 6-7 feet in the air. It's, to me, it seemed like it was the Empire State Building. And it looks at me, and it's kind of trying, bears have terrible eyesight, and it's trying to make me out. It is aware that something is there, and I am frozen, but I'm shaking. The bear goes back down on all fours, and on that point, I decide I better back up. Well, I took 3 steps in the sagebrush, backing up. I was trying to get a little bit of a crest of a hill between me and the bear. 3 steps in the sagebrush, or maybe it was 4, and of course, what do? You fall down going backwards. Fishing rod, everything, and fall flat on the ground. I didn't even try to stand up. I crawled on my hands and knees over the rocks, through the sagebrush, keeping as low profile as I possibly could to get away from the bear. I crawled for, it seemed like forever, but maybe it was another 60 or 70 yards till I finally got a hill behind me and the bear, where I, with my heart racing and now my hands are raw from the rocks and my knees, and I got back up to a semi-squatting position to look back up over the top. And the bear is laying right on the trail where I had last seen it with the cubs. So I tell that story. That happened 30 years ago. A couple weeks ago, I was in Yellowstone Park. I was with my wife and some friends. And my wife, Julie, and I were headed to go fishing. And we're walking down a trail again. This is only maybe 5 miles from where this happened to me 30 years ago. And these aren't road trails. These are trails. In this case, I was some 9 miles from the parking area. And in front of us, where we're headed exactly to get in the stream to go fishing, is a grizzly bear with a cub. It was deja vu all over again. The only thing is, this time we weren't 80 yards. We were a couple hundred yards. But again, for a bear with a cub, a couple hundred yards is absolutely no distance at all. If it wants to cover it, you're lunch. And so my wife and I stood there and looked at the bear and looked at it in the river, sitting in the river, and then it moseyed across the river and got into the willows, and we couldn't see it. So now we have a bear between us and where we're going to go fishing. Guess what happened? My mind clicked to 30 years ago and the sheer terror I felt that time. And I said, we're not going fishing. And we backed up and we went back down the trail and never saw the bear again. But it's interesting how your mind, I literally went back to that moment 30 years ago when I feared for my life, and with good reason, and had never been in contact with a grizzly bear and a cub since then until 2 weeks ago, within a couple miles, a few miles of where it happened to me 30 years ago. The only difference here was I could outrun my wife. No, that's not funny, folks, but that's true. You know, how do you outrun a bear? You're able to run faster than the person you're with. So anyway, I didn't do that to my dear wife, but we stood there and we realized when you're at Yellowstone, you're in the wild. Yes, we had bear spray, but nonetheless, you are in the wild, and you, in Yellowstone National Park, Glacier National Park, wherever you are in the national parks of the Rocky Mountain West, you're at nature, and there's nothing between you and a charging grizzly. There's nothing between you and a buffalo. So with that said, all is well with the world. I'll be back next Sunday morning with much more on the great outdoors. There's some really incredible things happening, potentially policy-wise, that could be really meaningful for conservation in the coming years. Thanks so much for being with me. Hope you're having a wonderful summer, and you have a great book to grab and read under some shade tree in the coming week. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN.